This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Sarah Dingle. This Friday, Facebook bans foreign-bought political ads in time from an imminent federal election campaign.
We should be concerned that these companies wield incredible power to shape public opinion, but also because we don't have the tools to measure and verify and challenge that as well.
No pilot error. The pressure is on Boeing as its system's failure is blamed for last month's Ethiopian Airlines crash. And is Tasmania now Australia's most progressive state? The Apple Isle poised to make gender on birth certificates optional. In what will be probably the federal government's last act before Australia heads into an election campaign, the Prime Minister has this morning officially announced a Disability Royal Commission to run for 3 years. Scott Morrison says the inquiry will cover all forms of violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of people with disabilities in any setting. Political reporter Alexandra Beach has more.
It was an emotional Prime Minister who stepped up to make this announcement. Scott Morrison's voice cracked when he spoke about his brother-in-law, who has multiple sclerosis.
Gary always said to me, it's not flash being disabled. But the good thing is that that's the condition you live with in Australia and that you're an Australian. And that has always meant a lot to me. They deserve our respect. This is so above politics, I can't tell you. And I really look forward to the work that's going to be done here. To all those Australians with a disability, their families, to Gary, this is for you.
The inquiry will be based in Brisbane and will travel the country to gather evidence. It's set to run for 3 years, but the Prime Minister says that can be extended if needed.
The Honourable Ronald Sackville, AO, QC, will be the chair of the Royal Commission. Justice Sackville will be supported by five other Royal Commissioners. Ms Barbara Bennett, PSM, Dr Rhonda Galbally, AC, Ms Andrea Mason, OAM, Mr Alastair McEwen, and the Honourable John Ryan, AM. Importantly, the panel of six commissioners include those with a lived experience of disability.
This is set to be Australia's most expensive royal commission to date. $528 million has been put aside to fully fund the inquiry. Scott Morrison says that's needed to provide practical support to help people with disabilities share their stories.
That is why it is an expensive undertaking, but an expense that is well worth the investment. This royal commission looks at mistreatment, neglect, abuse in every setting. In schools, in nursing homes, in the workplace, in prison, in hospitals, walking up and down the street.
Disability advocates are relieved the inquiry's been launched before the election campaign gets underway. Today's announcement is likely to be the government's final major act before entering caretaker mode. Carolyn Fermata is the Executive Director of Women with Disabilities Australia and says people have been fighting for this for more than 20 years.
We're delighted, to be honest. There are many people with disability who are no longer with us anymore who, you know, for many years advocated for this. So it's been a long time coming and I think it's, you know, it's fantastic that it's actually finally here. To be honest, it's I don't think it's really sunk in yet. We're so used to fighting for it that to actually now have it here, it just seems a bit surreal in some respects.
She's pleased with the government's choice of commissioners, and so is Greens Senator Jordan Steele-John, who has been a driving force in the campaign for a Disability Royal Commission.
This is one of the most happy days of my life. This is a great victory for the disability rights movement in Australia. Today is a day of celebration for disabled people, but it is also a day of sadness as we remember those who we have lost in those 5 years. And it should be a moment for profound reflection for Australia's non-disabled politicians as they ask themselves the simple question. Why did we not act sooner?
The inquiry's terms of reference have deliberately been left broad. Senator Steele-John says there should have been specific mention of redress, investigation and prosecution.
However, the nature of the commissioners leads me to believe that they will see the sense that the government has not and make sure that those elements are part of the commission.
He's also certain it will take more than 3 years to do this inquiry justice.
Alexandra Beach reporting. Well, the choice of royal commissioners has drawn praise from another prominent disability advocate. As we just heard, three of the commissioners are men, three are women, and they include amongst their ranks people with a lived experience of disability. Sue Salthouse is the chair of Women with Disabilities ACT and a former Senior Australian of the Year in the ACT. I spoke to her a short time ago.
Look, my reaction is very positive to this. I think that in comparison, the Child Abuse Commission went for a little longer, but in locking in 3 years initially doesn't preclude there being an extension if needed. And certainly the funding that was allocated in the budget, which has been agreed to also by or endorsed by the opposition, was actually a five-year funding envelope. So I think there is that anticipation that it could go longer if needed, and that's very comforting for people with disabilities.
And, of course, we've also seen the announcement of who the commissioners will be. There's six of them. What do we know about these commissioners?
Well, what I do see initially when I look at that lineup of commissioners is to actually praise the government, because I think we have a gender balance, and that was essential in this particular space where we know there's disproportionate violence experienced by women with disabilities. They have lined up women in those commissioners who have great experience in women's safety, violence against women, gendered violence. So I think that's very important. And they also have two people who have disabilities. Now, that's Rhonda Galbally and Alistair McEwen. I think that the expertise of people who actually have disabilities is very important, and an endorsement that the disability community will feel encouraged by. They also have put a balance with community expertise and legal expertise on that. If you think, like, Alistair McEwen is our Disability Discrimination Commissioner, Rhonda Galbally is on the board of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. She's the chair of the scheme's Independent Advisory Council. I think the other thing that they've done in appointing Andrea Mason, now Andrea is an Aboriginal woman, and she heads up the Nunjatjat Jara, the Pijinjat Jara and Yankunjat Jara Women's Council. So that's comprehensive. And it means that her expertise in the Aboriginal community is going to be very important, because we know the high levels of violence experienced by people with disabilities in Aboriginal communities. And not necessarily just people with disabilities. I think that's an important factor as well.
This is something that you personally have worked towards for many years as well, Sue Salthouse. How do you feel this morning seeing the Prime Minister announce this?
I think that we need to go very, very carefully and respectfully. And I was really gratified to see the Prime Minister emphasise our need for greater respect for people with disabilities. And within that, with greater respect, really means changing Australian culture to become a more inclusive society. And I think that that is a hopeful outcome from the Royal Commission that we'd like.
The timing of this is interesting. In political terms, this is likely to be a bit of a sugar hit of good news for a government on the cusp of calling an election campaign. How do you feel about that?
Well, I also think that this is a non-partisan. It's been supported by both parties. So to me, it sits outside the political cycle. I think it's not in any danger in the next 6 weeks or in the life of the next government, whichever major party gets to hold the seat of power. So I'm quite confident that this can swing into action very quickly after the election is called, the results are called, and certainly there would be very strong and loud outcry from the disability sector if there was any threat to that. But I don't see a threat to it. So, look, I'm very pleased. It's the culmination of years of advocacy and by many people and many organisations, but it's just the beginning now of restitution.
The Chair of Women with Disabilities ACT, Sue Salthouse. Well, federal politicians aren't the only ones clearing the decks for weeks of election campaigning. From today, social media giant Facebook will ban foreign-bought political ads from appearing on their Australian site. Only political ads paid for in Australia will be allowed. Facebook says it'll also be removing fake accounts and tackling fake news to increase the platform's safety. But some experts aren't sure they're going far enough. Sarah White reports.
Well, g'day, I'm here with the Treasurer, and he's delivering his first budget, and it's going to be a cracker. We are back in the blacks. How are you feeling?
Prime Minister Scott Morrison uses Facebook all the time to get his message across, including talking to voters this week about the federal budget.
So that's phase one. We get ourselves back into surplus. That's what we announced tonight.
Facebook is now the most important platform for Australian politicians to get seen and heard. That's according to Fergus Hansen from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.
Social media, of course, in and of itself is just a means of getting a message out. But I think in terms of being a platform that reaches Australian voters, it's ubiquitous. So it's used by essentially every Australian adult, and therefore it's a means of reaching every Australian adult with political content that potentially will sway their vote one way or the other.
It's not just the politicians themselves using Facebook. As the federal election campaign ramps up, our social media feeds will be filled with political advertisements from activists and lobby groups. But as of today, political ads that appear on the social networking site won't be paid for by anyone outside Australia in an effort to stamp out election meddling or so-called fake news. Fergus Hansen again.
The announcement from Facebook is essentially, you know, bringing greater transparency to the way that people are, you know, being able to look at ads and understand and interpret where those ads are coming from. For politicians, I think, you know, it'd be definitely an important part of the landscape of assessing how they use this tool, but I think it's for the good of the country that we're starting to see greater transparency. I think there's more that we can do, and I think this issue is only going to become more important as we start to see Facebook change the way its platform works.
Facebook came under fire last year when it was revealed the company Cambridge Analytica had mined information from 50 million Facebook profiles of US voters. And it was also claimed that Russia was using the social media platform to interfere with the US election. David Carroll is the Associate Professor of Media Design at the Parsons School of Design in New York, and he's followed the Cambridge Analytica scandal closely.
One of the things that the Cambridge Analytica story and scandal shows is the international nature of the political advertising business and how it really requires international cooperation to solve some of these issues. So it's a combination of governments cooperating together because, as we have seen, no single government is able to hold these big companies accountable.
How much power do sites like Facebook have over elections around the world?
It's hard to say because the research required to determine that is really controlled by the companies themselves. But we know from Facebook's own sponsored research that they were able to affect turnout substantially by just making the tiniest changes to an interface that encouraged people to go vote. They've done other studies where they've been able to manipulate the emotions of mass amounts of people through experiments. So we should be concerned that these companies wield incredible power to shape public opinion, but also because we don't have the tools to measure and verify and challenge that as well.
But it's not just Facebook. Other social media outlets also play a role in influencing elections. Brett Solomon is the Executive Director of Access Now, an organisation that defends the digital rights of internet users based in New York.
There's no doubt about it that the public sphere, the online public sphere has moved online. And so the environment in which we get our content, we form our views, and the way in which we vote is determined by what we read, what we see, what we upload, what we download, what we view, what we tweet, and what we consume. And so it's an absolutely vital part of the way in which we vote.
On the flip side, Brett Solomon says the ban shouldn't impinge on voters' ability to share their political views.
When you start to put these sorts of controls over content in the lead up to an election, whether it be the purchasing of advertisements, the uploading or downloading of content, the removal of information, as we're seeing with the new government laws on live streaming and on, you know, abhorrent and violent content. These are the sorts of controls that impact the free flow of information, and they impact the way in which the community, the polity, votes. And so we need to be very, very careful that particularly at these moments of heightened political activities like elections are spaces in which the community, the individuals are able to share their perspectives.
Brett Solomon is the Executive Director of Access Now. Sarah White reporting there. This is The World Today, and if you miss a program, you can find us on the ABC Listen app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at ABC News. Still to come on the program, Tasmanian parents set to have the choice of gender-neutral birth certificates for the children.
A lot of us are really excited and happy. We're leading the way for Australia, I think, also, so hopefully the other states might follow.
That story later. Well, the first report into last month's Ethiopian Airlines crash says the pilots weren't to blame and has instead pointed the finger at the plane's flight control system. All 157 people on board were killed when the Boeing 737 MAX went down near Addis Ababa. This report puts the pressure back on Boeing, which is scrambling to explain the deadline malfunction as it faces off the first class action by the families of the American victims. Here's the ABC's senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan.
Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 crashed just 6 minutes after taking off from Addis Ababa Airport last month, killing everyone on board. Just what happened on the 737 MAX jet has been a mystery. But today, the first report by Ethiopian aviation regulators point the blame at the plane's automated software system rather than pilot error. Ethiopia's Transport Minister Dagmawit Moges defended the pilots and said the problem was squarely with Boeing.
The crew performed all the procedures repeatedly provided by the manufacturer, but was not able to control the aircraft. It is recommended that the aircraft flight control system related to the flight controllability shall be reviewed by the manufacturer.
Specifically, the report says the jet hit an excessive speed before crashing and that the pilots fought unsuccessfully to gain control as a wrongly triggered automated system took over, despite instructions on how to override it. The disaster has disturbing parallels with another 737 MAX disaster in October last year in Indonesia, where 189 people were killed. The new revelations continue to rock confidence in Boeing, according to US aviation analyst Phil LeBeau.
We want to see more of the details, but the overall takeaway is that the pilots, at least initially, followed the procedures that Boeing laid out in order how to disable the anti-stall technology within the airplane shortly after takeoff. Then they, for some reason, inexplicably, turned it back on shortly before the crash, which made the situation that much more dire, if you will, for the pilots. We need to see exactly what happened.
The U.S. consumer advocate and one-time presidential contender Ralph Nader has joined the first class action after losing a relative in the deadly crash.
Those planes should never fly again. Those planes, the 737 MAX 8, must be recalled. Boeing executives pushed its engineers to press an aging design beyond its limits.
Samia Stumo died in the disaster, and her mother, Nadia Militon, spoke for bereaved families who were angry and confused.
We would all want to be like Samia, who was lighthearted. She brushed past negative, inconsequential comments and focused on what is good and what could get done. We as passengers need to demand that planes be safe so that no one else dies. Profits should not come before safety.
The U.S. Aviation Administration has cautioned that investigations are not over, but that action will be taken as more information becomes available. Boeing, which has seen tens of billions of dollars wiped off its market value, says additional layers of protection have been added to the software and that pilots will always be able to override the system and manually control a plane.
The ABC's senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Tasmania is about to become the first state in Australia to allow parents not to nominate any gender on their children's birth certificates. The state's upper house narrowly approved the legislation last night. Felicity Ogilvie reports from Hobart.
Those of that opinion say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no.
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 The ayes have it.
Division.
After 3 days of sometimes fiery debate, Tasmania's upper house has voted 8-6 to support the new gender laws. Candice Harrington is celebrating with her 17-year-old transgender son, Callum.
A lot of us are really excited and happy. We're leading the way for Australia, I think, also, so hopefully the other states might follow.
Under the new laws, 16-year-olds can change their gender without their parents' approval, and sex reassignment surgery won't be required first. That's something that will change Callum Harrington's life.
I won't have to get certain kinds of surgeries so quick, and if I don't want to, and I'll feel safe and know that my state and hopefully the rest of my country afterwards is looking after me and they actually care about me.
The most controversial part of the laws is removing gender entirely from birth certificates unless parents request it's included. The independent member for Launceston, Rosemary Armitage, voted against the changes.
I would have thought that the form could have been just a tick a box if you don't want gender included. It would have given the same outcome, but would have been a lot more comfort to a lot of people.
Labor and the Greens introduced the new gender laws. They've been opposed by the state Liberal government. In the independent-dominated upper house, the laws were supported and championed by independent member for Murchison, Ruth Forrest.
I have a view that we should treat all Tasmanians the same. And that's why it's been drafted this way, so that all Tasmanians are treated the same regardless of their background, their socioeconomic status, their gender.
Pat Gartland from the Catholic Women's League is worried that the new laws will make it too easy for children to change their gender.
This is a very big deal. If you're deciding you're going to be a boy anymore, you're going to be a girl. You really need to have careful thought given with people who understand all these things and have got your interests at heart.
The issue of women's safety has also been flagged by some groups who oppose the laws. But transgender boy Callum Harrington says it's needless concern.
There are some people that are worried about women's spaces, in particular with transgender identifying women, and a lot of people are saying how men could pose as women, but I think the problem in that isn't trans people, it's actually predatory men. So I think we need to be talking about predatory men who do commit these things rather than trans people.
The acting Tasmanian director of the Australian Christian Lobby, Dan Flynn, is concerned about the broader reaction.
This law makes unintentional misgendering of a trans person an offence, and that's out of step with community expectation. So this would be the lowest threshold of anti-discrimination bars in Australia.
The former Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Commissioner, Robin Banks, says the laws are an important clarification of gender.
They absolutely don't change the protections and the obligations that we all have to deal with other people respectfully.
Words are important for Callum Harrington.
It protects my safety and not many people like hearing it, but it protects my emotions and feelings as well.
The laws will now go back to the state's lower house, where the Liberal state government is trying to get an independent review of the controversial laws conducted.
Felicity Ogilvie reporting there. And that's all from the World Today team for this week. The program's supervising producer is Michael Edwards. Associate producer is Barney Porter. Technical production by Kem White and Alan Arthur. Web publishing by Sarah Tonkin and Sandra Orr-Prince. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening. And tomorrow morning, Thomas Ariti will be along with Saturday AM. We'll be back same time on Monday. I'm Sarah Dingle. Have a great weekend.
Hi, Stephen Smiley here.
And Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we are the hosts of The Signal. It's the ABC's daily news podcast where we aim to explain some of the biggest stories in the news with a bit of help from experts and journalists.
And so far this week, we've examined the federal budget.
Just the important bits.
We've found out what it's like living on the dole, which in most cases is well below the poverty line. And we've looked at a global territorial fight brewing over one of the most remote and untouched patches of Earth, Antarctica.
You can find past episodes of The Signal and subscribe to new ones via the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.